Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Natalia Rojas of Filipino Kitchen.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
It's a beautiful day in Chicago.
So
it's a blessing.
At this point, I feel like it's become hack that we have Daniel's weather corner. Daniel's of 2 days ago weather corner, because the podcast comes out on delay. But the thing I always keep coming back to is like, the weather in Chicago is always interesting, because it's always like, we just came off this like 2 day rainy spell and now it's like hot out. Like, I played tennis today and I'm just like, wow. You know, when you just like are outside in the heat for a while and then you're like, okay, what? Like, I'm like a little lightheaded.
You're like, what year is it?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's one thing that we need to realize once again about Chicago. And like, so for viewers that are not from Chicago, or listeners, I should say, is Chicago has microclimates.
Yeah.
Like, they, like, a lot of people like get tripped out about the microclimates. And I always say, the closer you are to the lake, it's going to be cooler. Mm-hmm. And especially during the summer. And the further away you are, it's hotter. And then it's even worse during the winter, because it's like 10 to 15 degree difference when you're by the lake. And they're like, no. And then they visit me. And yeah, then they experience it. And I'm like, I told you.
Right. I am like so glad for, because it's not like we ask how's the weather for you, but in the last 20 episodes we keep talking, I keep going like, how's your day going? And it's like, oh, it's this, it's that, it's, because it's like very much part of how we gauge if a day is good or not in this
exactly.
city.
Exactly. I think that's a very legitimate question and answer, which not a lot of people experience a crazy Chicago weather, and in which they said that once you have lived in Chicago for at least a year, you can live anywhere.
Yeah.
Because you can have the extremes in all ends. Mm-hmm. Extreme fall, extreme spring. Like, you know, you open the door and suddenly allergies slap you in the face. It's like, thanks, pollen.
Yeah.
I didn't expect you today.
You're right. So.
I like the idea of extreme fall. I feel like fall is like such a middling season.
I think like in this past couple of years though, like fall has been like, oh,
fall's been pretty extreme.
It has been, because like there's one day and I'm like, it's fall, guys, you can come off the trees now, and then I say that the next day a pile of leaves is outside my door and I'm like, okay, I didn't say it that quick.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you want leaves on the floor, huh? Vroom.
And I'm I remember one year there was it was, wow, we're really taking Daniel's weather corner to the
extreme.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a good Daniel's weather corner, I think.
Yeah. So I just remember like one year looking at the trees and it was just a pile of snow sitting on top of green leaves. And I was like, where the hell do I live?
Pretty much.
What kind of hell climate is this?
I mean, we can definitely like, you know, peg it like Game of Thrones. Like, it could be as extreme as Dorne, or as extreme as The Wall.
Well,
everything in between.
I think the thing for me is the everything in between. Like, Chicago is such a place of so many different lived experiences. Like, it is, in so many ways, it's like the dead center of this nation, and like, you get every, like, there are people from California here, the people from New York here, the people from the South here. It's like you have all of these influences globally too, so much so.
But like, they complain about it every time, just like as much as we do.
Yeah. Well, this is actually a fantastic transition for a couple of reasons I'll try and remember that I said this way and reference back to it later, but I probably won't. The thing that I think this is a great transition to is talking about Filipino Kitchen. So for our audience that might not be familiar, would you mind kind of explaining what that is?
So as the layman's terms of Filipino Kitchen is a Filipino food, media, and events company. It is not a restaurant, people. Nor I plan to even make this a restaurant. I will not live in a restaurant. So basically, on the deeper explanation of what Filipino Kitchen is, I basically want to be a hub for education, specifically using the lens of food to learn about history, to learn about culture, traditions. I mean, after all, we have 7,467 islands. So am I going to accomplish that in my lifetime? Probably not. So whoever is out there that is a Filipino American or Filipino blank, if you want to help, that'll be great.
Well, and I want you to keep talking, but the thing that I want to kind of comment on here is that this is something that we've talked about in the past with people that we've, you know, when we talked about the Hearing in Color Filipino series, there's also another time where we were talking about the Philippines. I don't remember, but basically, and this is what we were touching on before we started recording, which is this whole idea of it's almost inherent in the Filipino culture, the idea of branching and exploring, and also this educational aspect and this education through culture, education through music, education through, that's what we talked about a lot, but we haven't yet talked about the specific example of Filipino culture education through food.
Yes, and that's what I really nerd about. I love history and I love food. And I think right now, as I always challenge people to be like, give me a dish, a Filipino dish, and I can give you its history. And, you know, I also can challenge you that, you know, I can tell you what your politics is with how you eat.
Really?
Yeah.
You could tell. Okay, so what? Well, so we're both vegan.
Mm-hmm.
I eat a lot of carbs.
Which is fair.
Pasta.
Fair. I mean, but the thing is like, you know, when you would order something, for example.
Yeah.
It just like sometimes, it's just like a split second of like just looking at what they ordered. It's
sure.
It's not passing judgment. It's like really sometimes I just make a connection of like how they consume to what their politics are. And normally like it's pretty much on point. Like if I know that right now you say you're vegan and obviously you're more conscientious about like life, basically any life being, you're very respectful of that. You're very respectful of animal rights. And in that also saying that in a way, I would say you're a little bit of like a liberal. So with your out views in life, because, you know, you try to advocate for people that doesn't have a voice. And that comes with your with choosing what you consume and who you support.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I think that's very like much. Am I on the nose on that or?
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. Yeah.
So
no, we're like big lefties.
Exactly. And I think we would not get along if you were not. This would be a completely different conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the point. Food is such a monumental and a need of all of us, whether you're an animal, you're an insect, you're any life form. You need food.
Mm-hmm.
And through how you consume food is basically like we form our identities around it. We have our culture with it. You know, a lot of it, there's like a lot of different facets of Filipino food and Filipino culture and traditions. And once again, one thing that I always wanted to make a point of is Filipinos are not a monolith. We don't have just the five dishes.
Yeah.
And there's 7,000, as I said, I will ingrain this to everybody's heads, 7,467 islands, depending on low tide or high tide. Because, like, you know, high tide, it becomes 7,107 islands. So, like, you know, give or take, 300 islands, go away.
Oh, my God.
Well, so, where is your kind of like heritage in that, like, which, because there's Tagalog and there's like all a bunch of different languages.
So
like,
I am Tagalog. I'm part Tagalog and Kapampangan, which cool. Is mainly in the island of Luzon and also multiracial. So that's I'm a freaking mutt. But you know, it just embraces like I am from one of the main islands, and actually like specifically the Tagalogs have really experienced cultural genocide. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things, like, honestly, like in coming from different occupations and colonizations, like, you know, the Tagalogs have really lost a lot of our indigenous culture that we barely piece it together. And sometimes it's really painful to realize, but at the same time, it's one of those moments of just like, you know, what is out there that we can piece it together to be able to construct our history and our traditions that is not Hispanicized or mm-hmm. bastardized.
And well, I think that there is a clear effort to do that in people that, like, because I think that we've met, I'm trying to think now if the people that we've collaborated with are also Tagalog, but I'm pretty sure that a couple of them are. But anyway, my point here is that, like, I think that what I've always kind of admired about Filipino culture is that it's the and I think I'm sure that in a lot of cases there's a lot of desire to piece together that history. But I also think that what is remarkable about Filipino culture is the willingness to take up that burden of education, the willingness to be able to be like, I'm going to display for you my culture through performance or through food. And I think that is something that I'm always curious about, trying to understand how like what it is about Filipino culture that makes it easy to do that. That feels like such a privileged way of wording this, but does this make sense? Or
it makes sense, but it's not necessarily easy, just because, as I said, of like that cultural genocide. And yes, there's a lot of us that want to that does the cultural work. For me, as a cultural worker on my end, it's in a way it's like it's really hard.
Absolutely.
Because then I would have to look, like, right now in the last 2 years of, you know, as I said, I'm very well versed in history when the moment, you know, our version of Christopher Columbus has set foot, which is Ferdinand Magellan, in March 16, 1521. Like, from then on to present, I am so well versed in that history. But I felt like I was so lacking with our indigenous culture. So in the past 2 years, I have had the honor and really have been humbled to learn a lot of things. And as I have learned a lot of these things, it's, you know, we are so connected with the rest of our Pacific brothers and sisters and cousins. And with that realization, it's like, okay, basically in indigenous times, like, the ocean is the highway. I will quote Moana and say, we are voyagers. And that's how it just, like, makes sense. Whether it's our, like, non-Hispanicized Tagalog and, like, how the word construction is very similar. It's very Austronesian. So it's not just a Filipino thing or a Pacific thing. This line that we are part of Southeast Asia is very arbitrary. And it's just like, you know, somebody drew that invisible line and say, like, you're Asian. And yet I look around and no, but I don't really look Chinese, even though we have a really big Chinese population in the Philippines, because they have been our trading partner since the 9th century. Mm-hmm. And then in other parts, they look a little bit more like Indonesians and Malaysians. And yet, just because those islands are, like, closer over there and we have been trading partners with them for so long. And there's a lot of different layers of this. But in general, 2 weeks ago, I was in Seattle for the Pacific Northwest Tatao Festival. Tatao, which means to tattoo. And nobody asked me, like, what am I? Who am I? In other Filipino events, it's always like, oh my God, what are you? You're mixed? Yeah. Oh my God. And it's like, I'm human.
Right.
Meanwhile, like, I was in a convention hall full of Polynesians or Pacific Islanders, and not one of them asked me what I was, who I was. Because everybody was just welcoming, and this Samoan grandma was like, you know, you need to eat a little bit more. And I was like, I suppose in Samoa, I'm petite. I mean, by Filipino standards, I am not. And it is just like that welcoming moment. And even just like the little history that I know of Samoa, and for them also having colonized and missionized, and yet having to keep their indigenous culture and integrate it. I was just like, you know, when an emotion hits you like 50 million times at once, all 50 emotions, mm-hmm. like, you grieve for the loss that you have experienced in your own culture, then you are humbled because you're a witnessing someone or a culture that has integrated Christianity into their indigenous culture. How does that make sense? I have no idea. And yet, you know, you feel all these different emotions, and yet they are the ones that you look after because they're the ones who have preserved something, and there are a lot of connections. It can be said with our food. It can be said with our tattoos. Like, the Philippines was not called the Philippines when the Spanish first came. They called us Las Islas de los Pintados, the islands of the painted ones. We were tattooed from head to toe. And right now, just because of, like, eradicating that practice, it's now just like a mountain province, or like it's only in the mountains that you will see tattooed people. No, all our islands were.
Well, and I think that the reason why I'm so interested in, you know, we talk a lot about the idea of what identity can mean, and I think that it's so interesting to hear you talk about this, because in so many ways it feels like the work that you're doing is branching this, bridging this, how do you balance how to brand identity?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like, how do you think about that when it comes to, like, taking this and making it something that is, I mean, it's, I feel weird saying it this way, but, like, that is, like, a commodity? Like,
it is. I mean, it's okay. I mean, it is. And sometimes I feel that way, too. Like, yeah. You know, sometimes, like, oh, my gosh, am I commodifying my own culture?
Sure, yeah.
But at the same time, it's, like, I think I would revert back to a very powerful essay that I have read. I would revisit this essay every so often. It's called Culture Ingested by Doreen Fernandez, and RIP. I wish I met this woman, but she is a genius when it comes to food writing and understanding Filipino food. Mm-hmm. So how she kind of broke it down is when people would always, you know, a big subject of appropriation, right? And I always just try to remember what she says, that Filipino food is categorized in two things: the food that has always been ours and the food that we made ours. So The food that is always ours are adobo. Adobo is a Spanish name, which is, to me, adobar is to marinate or braise. And basically, we've had this dish and we just didn't know what it was called before the Spanish came. They saw it and they're like, oh, you know, they're braising. And so they just gave it that name, but it's always been ours. And it's a technique that we have developed that is ours, and it's layers of history on that. Like, it starts from just like a lot in, like, Latin American food culture. A lot of them, like, you know, would use, like, citrus, but for us, we've used vinegar. We have found out how to use vinegar, and a lot of our dishes are vinegar heavy, and there's a bunch of different vinegars, and a different vinegar will, you know, give a different result to a dish or to adobo. You know, you use this kind of vinegar, it'll taste more like this. And then, you know, you layer it with adobo. Is always, it's salty and sour. And that's another thing that I have realized about Filipino food. It's not ingredient based, it's technique based. So then it's adaptable. That's why I think a lot of us in diaspora, like in the diaspora, that we can adapt having our Filipino food in any place in the world, as long as you know your technique, as long as you know your flavor profiles. And, you know, even to the point of history with, like, the excavations and, like, finding things that would have residues of, like, vinegar and salt and some protein and then pepper and peppercorns and bay leaves and garlic. And it's like, what is that? That's adobo. And one of the examples that the food that we have made ours is pancit. Pancit is a noodle dish that can be comparable, it depends on which kind, can be comparable to chow mein. But the noodles have been brought by the Chinese, like that culture of having noodles. But would you go to China and find that specific pancit because it's named pancit canton? Would you go to Canton and be like, can I order a pancit canton? And they'll be like, what?
It's like hollandaise sauce, weirdly. Like the
Oh, yeah. How it's like, oh, like, this is, like, the French were like, oh, yeah, this is, like, the sauce that you can find in Holland, and then you go to Holland, like, and they're no. like, what the fuck is that?
Exactly. And I think it's the same way with, like, lumpia or, like, the egg rolls. It's called lumpia Shanghai. You're not gonna go to Shanghai and be like, can I have a lumpia in Shanghai, please? And they'll be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And so those are the dishes that we have made ours, but it was of Chinese influence. Another one is bibinka, which is like of Indian influence. So it's like, and all of it is because of like the galleon trade. The oceans has connected us, and we have been having these trading partners way back. I mean, the Spanish did not revolutionize the trade. It's always been there, and right. it has been like revolutionized. So like, I think what, going back to your original question of like, you know, are we commodifying? Sometimes we just work with what we have.
Yeah.
And sometimes we work with what platforms we have, whether it's food, performance, or art, or music. I think we just try to work with what we have and try to understand where is that coming from, because a lot of it has been erased in our history.
So I'm curious to bring it back specifically to Filipino kitchen. Like, mm-hmm. how did... You're obviously extremely well versed in the history of Filipino food. What was kind of your aha moment to be like, let's make this a thing?
Yeah.
So my former business partner and I started Filipino Kitchen. So Sarah Lynn, Pablo, and I, she's a writer and I was a photographer. And, you know, we were very involved in the Filipino community. And yet we burnt out on doing some community organizing work. And we wanted to integrate back. And yet we're seeing this, like, hype, like, 5-6 years ago of, like, constantly non-Filipinos keep on writing about Filipino food without context. And it's like, I don't want to be mad anymore. So as you get mad, then, you know, the deeper you go into, like, histories. And then now we're both history nerds. So then shifting that to, like, food history, specifically Filipino food history, then we're like, why not start this? You know, it's through encouragement of other people in her writing circle, and then yet bring me to the fold. And we started Filipino Kitchen because there was that need of like, we need to educate. We need to talk about it. We need to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, not just the Instagrammable stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh my God, this is so Instagrammable. It's purple. And I'm like, oh, people. So with that being said, we started Filipino Kitchen. Then it was supposed to be just a blog. Then other opportunities rose up. And then the next thing you know, we were doing lectures, workshops, speaking engagements, the festival, and pop-up dinners all over the country. If not, you know, making connections all over the world. And that was a very humble, that is still a very humbling experience for me. And now, like, you know, has Sarah has stepped back and to focus on her writing. And now I'm taking on, like, Filipino Kitchen solo. And I still have that in mind. I still have that goal. And I still want for Filipino Kitchen to be a resource.
So that, I want to ask you about that multimedia aspect. Like, mm-hmm. that is something that we talk about a lot, is just the power of, like, the translation and multimedia, like, having things that can kind of exist in these spaces. And I want to kind of also relate this to, you know, you mentioned that so much of this is, of what has happened is just a lot of excitement and energy around people that want you to speak and things like that. Do you think that it's been like a timing thing, or do you think that you've kind of developed something that is accessible in an educational format?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a timing, because, you know, you have had the late Anthony Bourdain and like a lot of this white folks, like, you know, advocating. Even Jonathan Gold, also the late Jonathan Gold right now.
And these, like, food folks are just dropping. It's terrible.
I'm not going to drop. Just to put some humor to it, but you know, they have paved way to like have the conversation, but of course, like in the lens coming from them, of course, like as a person, as a woman of color, and specifically Filipina, like, you know, there are certain levels of like how their reporting feels exotifying, or I'm not going to be pinpointing it was because Anthony Bourdain said this, or Jonathan Gold said this, or Andrew Zimmern said this, but it was also a cultural validation that we have led to let them speak for us and get that validation to look into our own culture and say that this is valuable, this is worth anything.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart, like, to be able to like need a white man's approval to say that, yes, I can bring adobo to work and I will be unapologetic about it, instead of like hiding in a corner and be like, oh my God, did it stink the office? And it's like, no. And that's what pains me. And I'm in that boat of grateful for them and the work that they have done, and also uplifting our community. And but at the same time, it's like, come on, guys. Why couldn't we do this by ourselves?
Well, that's super interesting. I know, in my perspective is of a white, straight, cis dude. But, like, I think that where I'm at now is I only want to hear about people's culture from the people that are of that culture. And whether mm-hmm. how that looks, and making sure to keep, like, respectful of, mm-hmm. of people's energies in that regard. But I don't feel alone in that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about now, the moment that we're in, but I think that a lot of white people are recognizing that, like, the lens of applying white people experience to other cultures has never been good. Like, there's never been mm-hmm. a time where we've been like, let's explore this culture, but like, let's do it the white way, where that's like been good. Like, that's like, we've never done it good. Like, even with at its best, it's still a little problematic. Where,
but
it's like,
I think, like, you know, you bringing it up, and you and Maureen bringing it up, and like even having me to your podcast, or like just having this connection, we need more of you guys to be able to amplify and like be able to create spaces for us instead of like, you know, when we're out in the streets, or like when we're out selling our food or whatever, it's just like, ugh, this annoying brown people again. And it's,
well, because I think that there's a difference between like white people at a street fair being like, oh my God, I made this lumpia, isn't it great? Like, there's a difference between that and like, you know, being two white people with a podcast asking questions and then shutting the fuck up.
And I think it's also the beauty about that is just like, because you're not talking about it amongst yourselves and like as if
speculating,
not just speculating, as like coming off as an expert.
Oh yeah, no, fuck that.
Of a specific culture. And that's why I always say, like, you know, I'm very grateful for my white allies and my white accomplices, and also, like, you know, part of me is white, so I'm very grateful for that. And just because then, you know, we can be side by side and like be able to like encourage and support each other, not to the lens of like, ooh, let me pick her brain and then let me see what I can do and then capitalize on that because Filipino is like such a hot thing right now. Please, for the love of Jesus Christ, I am not a trend. Like, I am not a trend. My culture is not a trend. It's not a new hot thing. I am not a listicle. Like, that's really where I, like, when I see this, like, fluff pieces out, and I'm like, palm, face, shake my head, smoke 8 cigarettes.
Yeah.
Like, that is literally my reaction. And then, of course, like, I'll try to use our platform to be like, okay, let's engage into this conversation. Even mentioning it before we started recording, that how do we really come to terms as Filipino people that were named after a colonizer, and yet we celebrate Philippine Independence Day from Spain on June 12th? Really, though? Are we? Can we think about that? And some people, like, you know, on our Instagram account goes like, well, what would you call it? And I'm like, girl, I have not memorized 7,000 islands, like, and the names of it. I don't have the time stone, because, you know, Thanos has it somewhere in a mountain province in the Philippines. Because, you know, everybody just wants to retire in the Philippines. Let Thanos have his moment. I cannot just be like, yo, Thanos, can I borrow that time stone? And like, let me go and turn back time and memorize 7,000 islands for you. And I think it's just like upsetting that sometimes people just peg us to be in a monolith. And that's the whole thing. It's, or I always challenge when people ask me, oh my God, what is the best authentic Filipino food? And I'm like, oh my God, what's the best authentic American food?
Yeah.
Burgers and fries? I don't think so. That's immigrants' food too. I'm like, please tell me. I'm like, what's authentic to New Orleans is not authentic to Chicago, is not authentic to New York. And people cannot grasp that.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
So I have a, so my, in this vein, my curiosity for you is, how do you think about food, like, curatorially, like, editorially? Like, kind of, what are your guideposts as far as when you're, you know, kind of developing maybe like a menu, or do you know what I mean? Like, what are your guideposts curatorially?
Usually it's a theme. Usually it's, if I'm collaborating with a chef or another entity, then we try to bounce off ideas. Sometimes we then stick something more in a traditional approach, and sometimes it's as crazy as having a longanisa grilled cheese and having really creative approaches to Filipino flavors. So it really just depends on where I'm going to do it. Am I doing it in Chicago? Am I doing it in an out of state or out of the country? What message do we really want to bring? With that being said, so it, the guideline is nothing concrete. It's very fluid. It's very synergistic to collaborate with people. And that's one of the basis of like a lot of our projects is, has been collaborative, because there's one of the stigmas in our community that we cannot work with each other. There's like, you know, they call it the crab mentality, which is like, you know, you don't want to see another Filipino success and you try to pull them down. And that's one of the guiding principles that I have for our, for my company, is just like, I want it to be as collaborative as possible. So then it depends. Like, sometimes we can look down into regionality. Sometimes it's a period piece. Like one of the pop-ups we have did in collaboration with the Errant Diner and Unipro, which is a young professionals organization that they have chapters nationwide, but this was in New York, and it was during heavy air quotes, Philippine Independence Day. And we're like, well, how can we reimagine our food without Spanish influence? So it could be something thematic that way, or it can be just like something fun that is just like a barbecue, what did I call it, like beers, barbecue, and banig. Banig is a mat, like those woven mats. And so I call it the triple B's. And it's just like a backyard throwdown of having different menu items from, like, you know, adobo in a bao with shishito leaves and all that good stuff, and something pickled, because, like, you know, pork belly is very rich. And so a lot of those different layers, it just depends. There's no concrete structure. There's a guideline of, like, you know, logistically what you need to do. But when we come out with themes or menus, it depends on the inspiration at the moment.
Wow. So you know, we talked about kind of how you curate broadly. I'm interested, you have an event coming up where you have curated something specific. Would you mind talking about your upcoming event?
So on August 19, we're having a Cultura Festival. Cultura Festival is a food and art festival that is on its fourth year here in Chicago. This year, we're actually part of the inaugural food festival Chicago-wide called the Chicago Tribune's Food Bowl, and we're very proud of, like, being a part of that roster with a lot of the who's who in the food industry here in Chicago. And Cultura is a festival that is Filipino-centric, that uplifts our Filipino community, not just in food. And we have of course, the food vendors. And our food vendors is a percentage of them is, like, local here in Chicago, So it's in tiers. Like, we have our local pool, we have our Midwest pool, we have the national pool, and actually we have two people coming from the Philippines that are going to be cooking. Chef Charwin T, who's going to be his third year doing Kultura, and Jean Gutierrez, who is bringing a regional longaniza from Cavite, which is super good, here in Chicago. So I'm so excited for that. And then we have lectures. We call it the Lechon Lectures because, of course, you want to offer some roasted pig while you learn. And one of our speakers is Lane Wilkin, which is a traditional tattoo practitioner. So basically that he is, I call him my Obi-Wan Kenobi when it comes to indigenous culture. Like, he has introduced me in a wide range of things. Then we have local, like, amazing, actually female DJs this year. We have DJ King Marie, we have CZ Boogie, we have Joffred, which is a amazing artist that's going to be performing. And we're flying in Slay Riz, which is the original Slaysian. She is just amazing. She puts on an amazing show. And also Ruby Ibarra. Ruby Ibarra has been really big in the hip-hop scene right now. She has had a billboard in New York and wow. was backed up by Times Square. And she was with SZA at a MasterCard commercial. Cool. And yet she wants to play at our festival. So that's a little overwhelming. And then we have local theater groups that will do excerpts and a Filipino sketch review and a cipher. So all of that in a one-day festival from 11 to 6 p.m. at Emporium Logan Square. And plus the coinciding venues will be the Chicago Distilling Company and the Emporium Pop-Up Space. So they're all in the same block, right next to each other.
I'd love to... Well, so I feel like a lot of the front end of this conversation is kind of talking about, like, Filipino culture and how... And this idea of, like, education through context. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you kind of, like, how has that been applied to this? Because it sounds like it... It sounds already like it has in many ways. But I kind of want to hear more about how kind of as in each step of this of the planning and mm-hmm. and all of it, like how that lens of education through context has come into play.
I mean, another layer of it is like that I forgot to mention prior is like we have community partners, and all our community partners like cover all facets of, you know, we have an LGBTQA representation. We have social justice centric organizations like AFIRE and Advancing Justice, Eye to Eye, which is the LGBTQA Asian Pacific organization that advocates. We have those community 826 Shy, which is one of my favorite, like, you know, after school matters writing program here in the city. And so we have all these different facets, and like as we layer each one of them that would put that context is also creating a safe space in this time and age. I cannot emphasize enough right now how we need that. Last year, we had an undocumented artist perform. So I always like say, like, it's not like I'm making a political statement, but we are. Like, we are making that statement. Through engagement of, like, and providing platforms for these food vendors, chefs, restaurateurs, to community partners and artists to have that stage and have a broader audience for them to really learn more. We have a dozen and one food festivals here in Chicago, mm-hmm. right? And yet we don't really contextualize. So, but when you come to Kultura, you don't, and everybody's welcome. We're not turning anybody away. It's open for like people who are curious about Filipino culture, to people who are Filipino identifying, to just, you know, everyone. It's not just like, oh, this is just ours and we can just huddle up together. No, it's for everybody, because we need everybody to have this education and have this moment, whether it's like you're eating sisig, which is traditionally made with pig's face, but also has a American occupation history. But you're eating this and like your non-Filipino is like, what is that? And this is really delicious. And it's like, sometimes it just happens in conversation. And it's also intergenerational. Like I've had like anywhere from like babies. That's why I always have stroller parking people. We have dedicated stroller parking to like grandmas and grandpas who are just there and jamming out, and you'll see them dancing to the DJs or like sit down in a lecture and just realize that they are like really happy about having this space, because that's one thing. In that context, let's strip all the pretenses out. We needed a space as Filipino Americans here and here in the Midwest, or Chicago more particularly, because we don't have an Argyle, we don't have a Chinatown, we don't have a lot of those things. So I took it upon myself to create that space.
That is something that I've kind of heard and feel for with Filipino culture, is that experience. And I want to kind of, you know, touch on this because, you know, from what we've talked about, like, so much so, the idea of having a space for this, for the like diasporic nature of the Filipino culture is so powerful. I'm curious, and this is usually the question that you ask, but I'm stealing it from you. Like, what are kind of,
how do dare you?
Do you know what I'm going to say? Do you want to actually ask it?
No, I have no idea what you're going to say.
Oh, kind of. How do you see this festival potentially developing? And kind of, like, what are your kind of goals in the years to come?
My next goal for Cultura is really taking it out on the road. And, like, now that we have created this structure, that it can be replicated in underserved cities. That is not New York. That is not San Francisco. That is not LA. Don't get me wrong. I love those cities. Mm-hmm. And I love the vibrancy of the Filipino communities there. And they're so cohesive. But at the same time, there's a lot of us out there that doesn't have those spaces. Right. So now that, you know, pretty much solidified this structure, I would love to take it out on the road and be like, hey, this is the format. This is what you can do. Or like, you know, let me fly there and organize it and help you, you know, gather around and have, like, let's just honor ourselves and let's take the space that we have. And, you know, sometimes it's nice to have physical spaces, but we also need to realize, like, the spaces that we create is within with each other, not just attached to a physical space. And sometimes we forget about that. We forget to humanize each other. So with that being said, yes, I want to take it around. I want to take it to underserved Filipino communities throughout the world. So whoever's out there, you want to come holler at me, I would love to be there. And really integrate what I have learned, trial and error, and how to be more conscientious and putting events, and how really, you know, also I think the greatest thing that I have learned doing this is taking myself out of context, meaning what I am doing is always bigger than I am. It will surpass me, and I have to honor that. So with honoring that, I want this legacy to continue on. I don't want it to end because I'm not around or I burned out. Mm-hmm. I want it to keep on going. I want this for my nephews and nieces to be like, not to say like my auntie started that, but it's like, I have space. I have community. And because a lot of us like have, especially in underserved communities, we have experienced all those identity crises. And that's why within the ages of, like, you know, 15 to 22 is like one of the highest suicide rates are Filipinos. And that's sad. It's because we just feel very displaced.
Yeah. And I think that a thing that I keep kind of, I'm realizing now, the actual question that I keep meaning to ask is just for people that are going through that. And as a person that, it seems, to my limited experience, it seems that you have maybe overcome is the wrong word, but have kind of a better, like a good understanding of how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. What's kind of like your, is there like advice? So that sounds so, like it sounds so cliche for something that is so intense, but I want to find a way to simplify this question. You now know what I'm saying. I'm going to like rethink this question in the future, but do you like, what would you tell a younger version of yourself, I guess is what I mean to say.
Keep on with that curiosity. Read and learn from other people, and also listen, observe, be respectful. By the end of the day, let's all, you know, take off our skins, all of us, lay out there. Can people tell if we're white, we're black, we're Asian, we're Filipino, we're... No. It's the bottom line of, like, if you realize humanity, if you realize that looking back to your history, not just personal, cultural, or even just, like, world history, it will make sense. Then allow yourself to grieve. Allow yourself to be angry. Allow yourself to then ask yourself, what am I going to do? You know, if I'm feeling angry about what you felt that you have lost, then what are you going to do about it? None of us can answer that for anybody but yourself. It's a lot of this moments of like allowing yourself to feel, mm-hmm. you know, and also don't compare your, I mean, apples, oranges, bananas, and mangoes. We're all different. If you're the durian of the basket, love yourself as the durian.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way it is. I think, like, you know, not to the cliche of, like, what is the advice or what is the formula or what is lessons learned of, like, overcoming, like, having gone through identity issues and, like, also, like, cultural insecurities is basically allowing yourself to be. And don't compare to be like, oh, but you know all these things. And I'm like, girl, I am not the only person. There's space for everybody. Your expertise, no matter how you feel like it's small or big, not everybody knows everything. So for us to help each other to piece that puzzle together, it's so much more better.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that's interesting for me with this is that I realize that the times that I've heard that question asked, that like, what would you tell a younger version of yourself? It's always been like the same kind of person. And I feel like so frequently I've not heard enough. And not that I need that, but I feel like there are people that need that, that need mm-hmm. to hear how, what advice they'd hear from someone who is maybe still struggling with that mm-hmm. kind of diasporic identity experience, but has to some degree come to the other side of it to know what it is that they want to be mm-hmm. doing with their lives and their career to be mm-hmm. that I think is as a white journalist, I feel like I've had kind of a moment. So I'm just, but I also, I'm thankful to you for kind of sharing that with us. We actually already have a few minutes left.
That went so fast.
It went really fast.
I know. I told you it could be a two-parter.
Well, this is something that we say a lot at the end, like after we stop recording, but I'm going to say it on air because I don't know.
It seems worthwhile.
We love, like, having people back.
Please come back.
On.
Of course. Come back
on. Yeah, of like, course. You have a recording of me saying, please come back on whenever you want to.
Yes.
We love kind of, you know, we love catching people and keeping a record of things happening as they're happening, but we also love hearing how they develop and how they evolve and in real time.
Of course. So. I will be more than happy to come back, especially we haven't even really talked about Moana yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so we'll do a full
Moana, yeah. How does this make sense review.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, like, you know, elephant in the room, neither Daniel nor I have seen Moana.
See,
which is criminal.
Well, it I'm is. Really bad at seeing movies on time. Like there's another movie that I really badly need to see that I haven't seen. I don't know, but I've seen things pretty much like a year after.
I mean, I will confess, I did not see it in the movie theater. I was hesitant. I'm like, psh, appropriation, yeah. Blah blah blah, and then read so much article, and I'm like, fine, let me watch it, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, watch it again and again and again. Analyze each frame. And I'll call my Obi-Wan Kenobi, Lane Wilkin, to be like, is this accurate? Yeah. How is this? And I was like, can you translate this?
Oh my God.
Because he does know a little bit of Hawaiian, and I'm like watching it with him.
Yeah.
And like, so he'll pinpoint like certain things, and I'm like, oh my God, I did not realize that. And it's like, and then afterwards, like, just completely having a whole new analysis for it. And it's just like, then Coco comes out.
Oh my
then
God.
It's only to a Filipino that Moana and Coco make sense.
Yeah.
Because it's both our cultures, but it's never explained the way it should be. But we practice both.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, sometimes that's how you would understand a Filipino.
Coco was brutal. Like, it was beautiful. It, like, Maury and I both sobbed after.
Oh, I mean, ugly, full body, like,
ugly cry.
Cracked. Just, like, just absolutely, like, every muscle in my body just, like, like.
Well, because it's, like, you know, it's the truth. We need to remember who has come before us. We need to honor them. And that's why sometimes, no matter how annoying it can be, like, your uncles and grandmas keep on saying the same stories.
Yeah.
But guess what? We're the ones repeating it to our nieces, nephews, children.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah. No, I my great-grandma on my mom's side is, like, she's, like, the character of all characters in my family. Like, I'm going to be telling my children about my great-grandma just because she had, like, personality of 1,000
pretty
people.
Pretty much. I say that my mom is amazing at, like, sharing that about my great-grandma, too.
Yeah. So. And it's just like, yeah, no, as much as I was like, enough with the Nana stories, like, okay, I get it. She was, bleh. But, like, it's important because, like, here I am still talking about it, and she, you know, she died 20 years ago.
Pretty much.
So, like, yeah, you gotta keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and I think that's where, I mean, but also not a lot of people are fortunate to know that family history because of
exactly
family separation. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, like, real things that people are like, well, I don't know, and they become chicharron, and you just become sad. And you'll be like, no, chicharron, don't go. But, yeah, you know, there are the chicharrons out there, but also chicharron pork skin is really good.
Well, that's as good as good as any.
Yeah. So the last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes that's very obvious, like letting people know where they can find out about an upcoming festival. Otherwise, we love hearing about other folks that you think are doing dope work, or any media that you're consuming, self-care or otherwise, movies, TV shows, music, stuff like that.
Oh my goodness. Anything that is Filipino Kitchen related can be found on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Filipino Kitchen. Our website is filipino.kitchen, where you can find about Kultura. Normally, our Instagram does uplift other people in our community, so anybody else who's dope is most likely be reposted over there.
Cool.
Because my 1 minute will be done if I just started renting off people. Any self-care things. I just love my mornings that I get to stretch, that I get to meditate, and I just get to be thankful. No matter how hard the day prior is, that a promise of a new day is a new chapter has always been a positive note on my end.
Cool.
That's so good.
Cool. That's a good one. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dan Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to... Do you like that now the slowing down gesture is in my... I start out really fast and then I'm like... You can head over to
scottbmag.com.
Well, because I think that I want to get to the chase of scottbmag.com. We spell it scapimag.com. You can also find us on social media, on Facebook. We have a Facebook page called Scoppy Magazine. We also have a Facebook group that we love and adore called Sounding Board. If you have a hard time finding it, you can shoot a message to either me or Maureen or the website or the Facebook page personally, and we'll get you in there. But we love that space. It's a really great space. We talk about local art. We talk about local politics. We talk about astrology. And just a lot of all the stuff in between there was things. Steven Universe, a lot of. Yeah, it's fun. It's great. Check it out. Also, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr. under Scopy Mag, spelled the same way as the website. You can also find the podcast, the one that you're listening to right now, Scopy Radio, on most podcast places, including iTunes, Google Play, and Radio Public. I want to plug one other... I want to plug one other thing before we... before I give it over, is that the... I just wrote an editorial.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for the first time in a while.
It's called Eat the Rich.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal. It's about the idea of a land value tax. So, meaning, like, taxing specifically based on land ownership, not based on property value.
Yeah.
Which is a, it's an interesting thought. So, check that out. Yeah, that's all.
Cool. And I'm here to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head to our website, scopymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, there are a couple ways that you can do that. The first is to sign up for email blasts. This will let you know every time we post something. This is important because even though we post across social media platforms, Facebook eats our shit. So if you want to see 100% of what we're doing and not just 30% of it, you should sign up for those email blasts. The second thing you can do is you can become a member. For as little as $5 a month, you can help us keep our lights on and pay our fucking artists. So if you want to help us in that endeavor, it is literally everything to us. And if you're interested in advertising opportunities, please feel free to reach out to us at scopymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.